which is why they called it an unmitigated economic debacle. To which Trump said, thanks so much. I've always said America's economy has too much buckle. It is our job to de-buckle it. But Trump doesn't believe so-called experts with their so-called facts talking. At a rally in Michigan last week, he told the crowd the move would actually be good for the economy.
And I don't know if you know it or not, Michigan, but Mexico took about 30% of your car business. If we close the border, that means we're not taking those cars into our country. And what does that mean? That means you're going to make more cars right here in the good old USA.
That's right. No imported cars or exported cars. We'll shut ourselves off from the world just like North Korea. Get ready for the exciting new 2019 Pontiac Oxcart. Now, a lot of these asylum seekers come from Central American countries further south. So to punish those countries, Trump has officially taken steps to cut off aid to Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. Or, as was reported by Fox News, Trump cuts U.S. aid to three Mexican countries.
While rambling about wind energy at the same rally, he bragged about energy production under his administration, and for some reason, he decided to go on an extended rant about how much he knows about wind.
If Hillary got in, you wouldn't have that stat, I can tell you right now. You'd be doing windmills.
If there's one thing we've learned about Trump's presidency so far, it's that he loves doing random sound effects.
Bing.
That's the whole presidency right there. He lies about funding for the Special Olympics and tries to take away his voters' health care, but they love his sound effects. We're living through the Police Academy presidency.
Bing. Bing, 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 bing. Bing, 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 bing. Bing, 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 bing. Bing, 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 bing.
And even in the early morn, you hear him blowing his horn. Three more Redskins bite the dust. That's the sound effects man. He has such an awful lot to do, and yet he very seldom ever misses a cue. He's a three-alarm fire and the fire chief, too. There goes the sound effects man. When the wind is howling. That's the sound effects man. Hear the thunder growling. That's the sound effects man. When the battle is raging, he's right in the middle of the fray. When he blows his whistle, crime doesn't pay.
Mueller's report may not have established Russian collusion, but it exposed a whole world of corruption most people didn't know about. Donald Trump isn't working for another country. He's working for himself. He's enriching himself while trying to take health care away from millions. In other words, we're in deep.
Record deepness.
President Trump is no great student of history, but you would think he would have his own family history down, especially if he's going to just bring it up unprompted like he did today.
I mean, Germany, honestly, is not paying their fair share. I have great respect for Angela, and I have great respect for the country. My father is German, right? Was German. And born in a very wonderful place in Germany, and so I have a great feeling for Germany.
No, that's not true. Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, was born in New York City, in the United States of America. Now, if that wasn't the third time he's been recorded telling that specific lie, it might be easier to believe that Trump just could be mixing up his father with his grandfather, Friedrich Trump, who was actually born in Germany. He left at the age of 16 to come here to the U.S. He actually tried to return to his native country, but he was kicked out for skipping military service. Now, you can understand why the president might be confused. Fred Trump, the president's father, pretended he was of Swedish ancestry for years in an effort to not offend his Jewish customers, according to a Trump cousin and family historian.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Audrey Berman is in the studio. And Audrey, now, the first, you know, we brought this up earlier in the show. Are you still wearing the Long Table Harvest hat as
yes,
well?
Yes.
You are?
I am.
So you're doing two things. Or are they linked?
They are absolutely linked, yeah. So Long Table Harvest is an organization that I co-founded in 2015. and so our gleaning program is the first program that we did. And then...
Tell our audience,
okay,
the thousands of people listening, what gleaning is.
Sure. Gleaning... The way that we define it is we pick up already harvested food from 40 farms in Columbia and Dutchess County and then distribute that out to food pantries. So it's food that didn't sell, seconds, culls, things like that.
Funny-looking squash and stuff like that.
Yeah, cute little funny-looking squashes. And we look at all of our work as a form of collaboration. So with the gleaning program, we collaborate with farms and we collaborate with food pantries and connect them with our services. Rolling Grocer is similar in that we collaborated with Hawthorne Valley and with the Hudson Core Group to bring that project to fruition. So there's also another project kind of in the works, but in the very early stages, and that's also very collaborative.
What's that project? Can you talk
about? Well, it's the community food hub.
The DRI project.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no like one umbrella covering all of this. That you're just making different collaborations all over the place?
Yeah, absolutely. Where it makes sense and in the different services or geographies that we service, you know, we're going to be working with different people. So
when you say we now, which we are we talking about?
I guess Long Table, when I say we.
Right. But they're different entities is what I'm trying to establish.
Yeah. So Long Table Harvest is fiscally sponsored by Hawthorne Valley Association. And Rolling Grocer 19 is currently fiscally sponsored by Hawthorne Valley Association.
Oh, it is? Oh, I thought Berkshire had something to do with it.
Berkshire Taconic is a large donor of ours. Okay. Yeah.
So Rolling Grocer isn't rolling right now. Well, they're going to start rolling again.
Yes.
But in the meantime, they found a semi-permanent a space, let's say it that way. We don't know how long they'll be there. At least 2 years. On South 2nd Street here in Hudson, New York. Beautiful Hudson, New York. And it's a store. And you've been there, Ellen. I've been there. How's it going?
It's going swimmingly.
Swimmingly?
I hear people talking about it all the time.
Are they saying nice things?
Yes, of course. And they're saying, I have to go grocery shopping, and that means I have to go, and then I'm going to Rolling Grocer, and then I'm going. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, the best feedback I've gotten from a dear friend said, I love it when I just go to the grocer because I get everything I need and nothing I don't need.
Well, that's what I was saying to Ellen earlier in the show, is because it's so carefully selected, you don't have to make choices, and the choices that have been made for you are good ones. I was raving, of course, about the nuts and dried fruit because, you know, that's my jam.
That's your thing?
That's my jam. I don't eat jam. I eat that stuff.
Yeah. It's better than jam.
It's better than jam.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool. But then, you know, all the other things I eat are there.
Yeah.
And I don't have to make choices.
Yeah.
I don't have to, you know.
Decision fatigue is a real thing. You go to the store and there's 15 different kinds of olive oil. You're like, which one am I going to get?
Yogurt.
And you do that with everything.
You do that with everything.
Yeah, I was in the grocery store and I saw, I don't really typically go to ShopRite, but I popped my head in there and I saw the yogurt aisle and was just shocked.
I know, there's a lot of yogurts
How many options there were.
After that whole, you know, Chobani thing sort of set off a whole new wave of yogurt consumption.
Yeah.
The thing I noticed at ShopRite recently, I had occasion to go into the cereal aisle. Did you go into cereal?
No.
It's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. The bread aisle's bad, too.
The bread?
Bread aisle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huge.
Yeah.
And most of it has, you know, 20 plus ingredients in it.
Yeah.
But.
And you only have good, healthy bread.
We've got Sparrowbush farm bread and Hawthorne Valley farm bread. I think that's it for now.
And I think people will be surprised that you have meat and fish.
We have meat. We have seafood. We've got frozen fruit. Got frozen vegetables, fresh vegetables, fresh fruit.
You have frozen fruit?
We do.
Oh, Ellen, I have this package of frozen strawberries.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Sitting in my freezer right now, and I'm just waiting for some...
The right moment.
The right moment to put them on some vanilla ice cream. Right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe a party. You want to come over? Oh, wait. You found out you're lactose intolerant. You can't eat
dairy. You can get dairy free ice cream. And we carry it at the Rolling Grocer.
I thought so. That coconut stuff.
Yeah.
You have coconut ice cream.
Yeah. Right. It's made with coconut milk.
So party will still.
Yeah, still happen.
Still happen. Yeah, we can't keep food on the shelves. It's incredible.
That's great.
And the produce is flying off. So we're constantly restocking.
Well, that's what people need is really good fruit, fresh produce.
Because
you go to. ShopRite, and there's a lot of produce there, but I don't know where it comes from. I don't.
Yeah. At one point, they were trying to do some local stuff, but it wasn't. And I don't think it was very successful. I mean, when your average shopper goes to a supermarket and sees local and it might be at a higher price point, they're just going to go to the other stuff, probably. I don't know. But we don't need to talk about ShopRite because we have our own grocery store. By the way, does this mean we're no longer a food desert, technically?
I don't know how long it takes for that to happen.
But would it? I mean, does it qualify?
I don't know what you have to necessarily.
I just read somewhere that a food desert is defined by it takes you a half a mile to get to a.
Right, but then what qualifies as
the place that
right.
is in
I mean,
half
I would
mile.
Hope that we
I would think so.
Qualify as that.
Right,
yeah.
And then you can get everything you need there.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
The basics, milk, bread, butter, eggs.
Bananas.
Basic.
Top seller. Number
really?
One seller.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's good because that's a hard thing to keep fresh sometimes. And, you know, you got to, you know, sometimes the produce and everything is hard to deal with because, the margins are so low. Yeah. And
well, then you make banana bread.
They don't really have a license to do that.
We search a discount product once it, goes past a certain place. And
when something goes past, could you, bring it back to Hawthorne Valley and let them use it?
Maybe. I mean, the idea is that with the community food hub, that we have a processing kitchen, and so that surplus product gets funneled there.
Right. How's that project going? Is there any momentum on it?
Not a lot of movement at the moment, but there's little stirrings happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Mr. Ping in charge of things with that, or
Todd Erling?
Todd Erling. Okay, yes. I'll talk to Todd.
Yeah,
I really would love to see that happen. And I'm sure Todd knows his way around. I mean, this state money thing is such a
and it's reimbursement. So,
Boy, we've had meetings on these DRI projects, Ellen. They're not fun.
Mm. Oh, for the ones that are now
the city ones
coming
yeah.
through. Yeah,
the city has five.
Yeah.
Of wow. projects
right.
of various sizes and natures, mm-hmm. and I hope you, those who have private ones, such as the food hub one.
Tell me
know
about
how to move
the,
it along.
The food hub, because I think I missed that meeting.
It's a complex project, but the idea is that we would have multiple entities operating under one facility, distribution and aggregation of local products and foods grown on farms in the area, processing kitchen to deal with any surplus so that we could have a line of, we really would love some prepared foods, grab and go stuff that's really affordable.
Oh,
that
you got the lingo down for a... Everybody's talking grab and go.
Grab and go. He's grabbing and go. So we could sell that at the grocer, both in Hudson and then mm-hmm. once we're in other parts of the county. So really would be kind of our main distribution aggregation point. But then the idea is to also have other food-based businesses in there and then job training into those businesses. Mm-hmm. So really as a food as a catalyst for job creation.
And wouldn't this... isn't one of the ideas that local farms would then use it as a way of getting their product to the market or getting their product to
institutional buyers?
Institutional
right.
buyers,
so,
okay.
yeah, if you're a small, medium sized farm, you can't necessarily meet the minimum requirement to sell to, let's say, Columbia Memorial Hospital. So we could purchase carrots from three farms and then have enough to sell it to them. Or schools even. So. Mm-hmm. That's definitely a large component of that project.
And so I know in the original proposal, they were talking about doing retail at various places, but you, Rolling Grocer, would then be their retailer. I mean, their, yeah, sort of.
I mean, yes? I think we could have some sales on site. Mm-hmm. Then we could sell up to South Second. We could sell to Rolling Grocer.
Right.
The trailer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ellen, the grocer will roll again.
Yes, I know.
Oh, you know.
Roll again.
I have faith.
You want to explain how it's been conceived?
Yeah, well, so initially we had wanted it to start in Hudson and then move to other parts of the county, but the demand in Hudson was just so great that it really made sense for us from a logistical perspective and a financial perspective to really put roots down here and have that as our first kind of hub and then use the trailer out. It basically is now freeing it up to go into other parts of the county, beginning with New Lebanon.
Ooh, way up there.
Yeah, potentially Stuyvesant, Valencia. We're still.
What's the status around the county in terms of, I mean, we've known always that Hudson itself has problems with groceries available in certain neighborhoods. What's it like out in the county? I mean, are you identifying?
Well, yeah, that's why pockets? I knew Lebanon would be our second area, because there is no grocery store there either. And so a lot of residents go into Pittsfield and do their shopping.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, does Felicia have a grocery? They do.
They
right?
do. They have that that Hannaford.
They have a Hannaford. What else is there in the county? There's the two Hannafords, the ShopRite, the Aldi's.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all around here.
Yeah.
But out in the county, there's just that one.
There's
Hannaford?
An IGA out in Hillsdale.
Oh, okay.
There's now Random Harvest in Craryville.
Oh, what's that?
It's a new co-op.
Oh.
Food co-op.
I did not
a
know.
A worker-owned co-op, but okay. Beautiful store. Highly recommended. You should check it out. They have great prepared foods.
Oh.
My friend Amy Lawton's the chef there. And
okay. Random
yeah.
Harvest. Didn't know
it's right on 23. So you're headed out to Hillsdale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't go outside of Hudson.
Yeah.
Ellen knows that.
Yeah. I mean, Germantown has Autos.
Yeah, but that's not really.
Not really a grocery store.
It's more like Oldie Hudson.
Oh, exactly.
So, there's a real gap. There's some gaps.
Yeah, and once you move rural, it starts to change, because here we're lucky in the city of Hudson that there is a range of people, of wealth, of demographics that can really support our mission at Rolling Grocer, which is this fair pricing system.
Right. You want to describe that quickly?
Sure. So when folks come and shop with us for the first time, we ask them to look at this chart that we've created. So they would identify what their combined household income is, and that would place you into one of three price tiers. There's blue, there's orange, and there's green. And then you would look at some social factors that could either tip you up or down. So we recognize that, you know, what you make annually or monthly doesn't necessarily depict your full financial picture. So there's social factors that could qualify you to shop in one or the other. And so we also want to articulate that if you shop at the green tier, which is our highest tier, those prices are actually competitive retail prices. So
that's what I was telling Ellen.
You're going to get what you would get when you go out, you know, into Greenport or what have you. The blue and the orange tier, so blue is the lowest prices. Orange is kind of in between. Those are for folks who kind of have trouble shopping at the grocery store, don't have a car, or don't own their own home, or, you know, have a whole host of challenges that prevent them from accessing food. So we really want to make that super clear that those prices are, they're either wholesale prices, so what we pay, we pass that on, or they're between wholesale and retail.
How many, you have to sign up, Ellen. You and I are both in the computer. How many people have signed up?
Last count was 805.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
We're thrilled. I mean, it's probably more now.
Wow.
Yeah.
I keep hearing people talk about the Rolling Grocer all the time.
I'm so glad to
love
hear
it.
That.
And, you know, you say if you're at the, what's the highest? Green.
Green, yeah.
It's the same. Actually, it's better in some cases, because as I've made very clear here, my favorite products are done in bulk there, which means you get them more cheaply than you would if you bought them at another store that sells them in little plastic containers.
Right. And we're about to launch a new tier called the Teal Tier.
Oh, wow.
Which is just you shop at whatever tier you're at, and then you basically tack on 15%, which would go as a donation to Rolling Grocer.
Oh.
So it's a way to give back every time you shop and to help us fulfill our mission, because we have to fundraise still to meet our costs. You know, we're buying in food, and the idea is that we're making some bit of margin on that, but we still have to fundraise to pay the employees, to keep the lights on, you know, run everything, basically.
Should we give a shout out to some of your fellow employees?
Sure.
Who are they?
There's Celia CC Graham, who holds it down on the sales floor most of the time, but so integral and such a force. And we're so grateful that, she's with us. And then Michelle Hughes was recently brought on to manage a lot of the ordering and the sales, and also focus on development. But the three of us together are stepping into a co-directorship, and we're basically leading this charge, you know, equally and together. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited about that. And then we've got Christian Johnson, Cece's brother, who helps us out on the sales floor. And then Brigham Scharf is our education coordinator, and we're actually trying to hire another retail associate to help us on the sales floor.
Great.
Yeah.
That should be easy to recruit.
I hope so.
From your customers.
Yeah. 805 of them.
805. Do you have to register?
To sign up? Yeah. Or to purchase food? Yeah. You don't, but then you default into the green tier.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Some people, you know, Alan, don't like to, you know, give their information.
Right.
I'm like that, you know.
But what's funny is when you swipe your credit card, we still get all your information anyway.
There you go. Rolling Grocery. And I gave the times earlier, but I wasn't sure I was correct.
Yep.
It's 5 days a week.
Yep.
Closed Sunday, Monday.
Yep.
2 to 7 every day? Are they open?
2 to 7, Tuesday through Friday, and then Saturday, 11 to 4.
Ooh. Yeah. See, I didn't get that correct, Alan. 11 to 4 on Saturdays. 11 to 4 on Saturdays. That's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, eventually we hope to be open much more, but as, you know, in the early stage of this enterprise, we're going to go slow.
I noticed when I was there the other day that there was like a little library of cookbooks there. And a couple of chairs and table where you could, I guess, look up recipes.
Absolutely. Yeah. We want to provide resources to our customers. And so.
Well, would you accept some cookbooks that I'm trying to find a home for?
Sure. We'd love that.
Okay.
Yeah. Grow our library. Hey, you can come hang out. Read some books.
Yeah.
Alan. Take pictures of some recipes for the broccoli that you just purchased. So, yeah. And so, yeah, we'll take donations of cookbooks that you have and also cloth or reusable bags because we sell those at checkout for $1 a piece. Mm-hmm. That goes as a donation to Rolling Grocer. And it helps offset the usage of plastic. We have bio bags and paper bags. And now that New York has banned plastic bags.
Charge 5 cents.
We'd like to rely more on reusable bags as much as possible.
Yeah, Alan, you got a bunch of those totes, those free tote bags you always get?
No? I've got, I've got tote bags.
I'm got a stack I'm going to bring in.
Awesome.
They're really cool ones, too.
And I also, sorry.
No, I was just going to say I have a lot of paper, really substantial.
Yeah.
Brown paper. Uh-huh.
We take some of those too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did want to shout out Tom, who's been coming in and volunteering.
Me?
Yeah, you. Pricing our meat for us.
Yeah, I become the official meat pricer, Ellen.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Sir Meat Pricer.
Sir Meat Pricer. I sit in a little back room by myself. And
what do you do? Stamp the price on the.
Almost like that. No, there's a little computer and there's little stickers come out, and then I put the little stickers on the meats, and, you know.
He used to do some math.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to use my noggin, which is, you know, dangerous, but it works.
Good.
It's fun. I don't want to get all whatever, but food justice, as they call it these days. But food, for me, it goes back to, you know, Sermon on the Mount. You got to feed people. You feed them, you clothe them, you house them. And so food issues have always meant a lot to me, and that's why I volunteer there, because I think it's essential, you know? And it's serving people in a way that they need to be served.
Right.
And, you know, government can't do it all the time. As I know from my other personality or whatever you want to call it. Anyway.
Wait, who is this other personality?
That guy who sits in front of the
politician.
Common Council.
Oh, that guy.
That guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's not me. I've gotten very interested. Ever since we had Therese Eben in here. Talking about personae, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I like to identify my different personas.
How many do you have?
Is this going to turn into a therapy session?
Nah, just curious.
Well, we'll talk about that afterwards.
Okay.
I do actually have a private me. We'll talk about that afterwards.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, right? That's scary. Ellen is very... Uh-oh. I think we have another guest arrived. Oh, yeah, it is. Yet another guest. So we're not going to do the bum's rush, but take a powder.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Audrey, thank you. I know you have a busy schedule, and I had to beg you to come in, and I'm glad you did.
Glad to be here.
Because it's important to get the word out. Rolling Grocer 19 now has a semi-permanent home on South 2nd Street, right around the corner.
6 South 2nd Street.
6 South, but right around the corner from Warren.
I want to ask if you know the history of that building. Was it once called the Shrimp Box?
Ooh. I hope so. Can we bring it back?
I'm not. I'll have to ask our local historian.
You do that. In the meantime, Rolling Grocer, it's open Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 2 to 7.
Yep.
And then on Saturday from 11 to 4, closed on Sunday and Monday. But who knows? If you shop there and they make more money, they can hire more people.
Join the teal tier and then we can hire more people and be open more. Yeah.
The teal tier.
The teal tier.
You can feel very special if you're in the teal tier.
Yeah.
It's my wife's favorite color.
It's a beautiful
color.
Yeah.
She's going to want to join that just for that reason. I know her. I know her. Anyway, Audrey Berman, thank you so much for coming in.
Appreciate it.
And you're doing a great job there. Yeah. And keep it up and, you know, let me know how things are going. But make it a regular stop here to let us know about all the food issues that you are involved with.
Absolutely.
When Long Table Harvest kicks back in, let us know.
Sounds good.
Hi, this is Chris France of Talking Heads, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, Accra.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter W. Bone of Gilboa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, the local hangout of the airwaves for Greene and Columbia counties.
We have a special guest in the building, man.
Viral man himself.
Man. And you know what the thing that's super cool, besides all the other things about Brian, is that when I hit him and I said, yo, bro, do you think that you could stop by or call on the show? No hesitation. Immediately, he was like, anything for you guys. And, you know, I mean, Saturday morning, I literally woke up and watched him on CNN.
I did.
I literally woke up and watched him on CNN. On Thursday, my son Keelan, who we all know, on Twitter, he's like, Dad, isn't he from Hudson? And they were showing the video. I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, this is so dope. Like, and then that's when you knew, like, okay, this thing's going places.
He was my whole timeline.
Yeah, mine too. So, Brian, how you doing, man?
Good, good. How are you all doing today?
Just good. That's it?
You know, settling back in after a big week, so a little tired, but I'm doing good.
So let's go backwards, man. Before we talk about the actual incident, because we know who you are, and this is nothing short of what you would do any day, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back and talk about the organization that you're a part of and talk about yourself and tell people who you are and what you do.
Yeah, of course. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on today. It's a pleasure to be back in my hometown studio after doing some bigger stuff nationally. So I am the executive director of the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. We organize with immigrants and allies to collectively empower, support, and defend our communities. I grew up here in Hudson, graduated from Hudson High in 07, graduated from Hudson Valley in 09, and then went off to college in Boston for a few years before returning back to Hudson. And then myself and three other community members founded the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement in October of 2016.
Okay. Slay, I'm sorry. Go, Slay.
No. I was just appreciating. The work.
Ray, because I'm not going to hog, because you guys always tell me. See, Brian, this is what happens. They say that when the guests come in, I hog up all the good questions, and then I pass it off after the guests already answered all the good questions.
I ain't saying nothing.
No, I'm learning to share.
I'm like, well, your shoestrings, how those look?
So I'm learning to share. Okay, so what I want to do, because I remember this day very clear.
Yeah.
I do, and the reason why is I'll let you start talking about it, but something happened this day, and we are a bunch of people that talk amongst each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a call that went out. Not a call. There was a summons.
Yeah.
I remember it, and I was at work, and I was like, damn, I wish I could get there. I'd had no idea that this was going on or whatever. So Brad, kind of take us through the day of when this happened and how everything transpired.
Yeah, so the day began with myself and two community members going to Hudson City Court. It's a common practice for CCSM to accompany people to their court dates, whether it be at the city court or immigration court out in Buffalo. The reason we do so is just to provide support to community members. In addition, we know that at least 12 people in Columbia County have been taken out of court before their hearing, before being convicted of anything. By ICE. It's a common practice for ICE to be stalking the courtrooms. And of course, we disagree with this. We think it prohibits people seeking justice and justice being served. So what I mean by that is somebody might be there because they allegedly violated a law, but somebody also might be there because they're a victim of domestic violence or something like that. So it's really deterring people from seeking justice that really deserve it in our community. So after leaving court, going from court to their attorney's office, ICE followed us, and a couple blocks later, they pulled us over. Okay. And three officers got out of the vehicle. As they were getting out of the vehicle, myself and my passengers ran through a quick Know Your Rights training. So the Know Your Rights training is you don't have to answer anything that they say. Remain silent. You don't have to provide any form of identification. Your passengers in this vehicle. Don't open the door unless we all collectively agree that we're going to be opening the door, and record this video, which is why I'm here today, because myself and our community members all exercised our rights, and that video is now viral. So, of course, as you know, once the officer came to my window, actually, let me step back for a second because this is an important part. After our quick little Know Your Rights training, I got on the phone. So I called my partner, Gloria Martinez. I let her know, like, I'm surrounded by ICE. Get the word out. I put something out. She put something out. I started making calls. And within, like, I would say 10 minutes, our attorney was on his way, or my attorney was on his way. Tiffany Garriga from the city council was there, and KK also came as well. So it was really a rapid community response. I think it's important to recognize that it's not something that just happened. It's something that we've been preparing for. We've been building for the duration of our movement.
That's dope, man. Let me give you a clap. Let me give you a clap. It's kind of like, yo, when your baby, you like go into labor, like, yo, pack the bag.
Yeah,
you're
ready.
It was time. It's time. Ready. Yeah, let me give you a clap.
Yeah, it was a wild day, because I was getting dressed and stuff, ready to start my day, and I get a call, and I see, like, it's Brian. So I'm like, oh, it's Brian. I'm like, Brian, what's up, man? He's like, can you get to Fifth Street, because I'm surrounded by ICE officers. I was like, oh, all right. I was like, all right, I'll be there right now. So we just kind of rushed out, and I met up with Brian, and, you know, just seen him in action, and it was great. Like, he showed exactly why you should know your rights.
Know your rights, yeah, definitely. So I'm at work, and I get the same, you know, the text and everything. I'm like, damn, you know, I'm all the way out here. There's no way that I could get there. But I know you're there, and you're keeping us in the loop. But I had no idea, and I had no idea. Brian, I know your rights, and I know that you're smooth. We've worked together on different projects. But, man, it's not often that I get up and start clapping when I'm not even at something. But the display of wording and the way that you handled yourself, so respectful but so brilliant and intelligent, man, I stood up from my computer and started clapping. I was like, man, this guy knows his stuff, and I'm proud that I know him. So, but, yeah, I got to give you a clap, because just the way you handled that was just, it was amazing, man.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Get a clap for KK and Tiffany as
well. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. You know. I mean, you know, I ain't going to never turn down a clap. But even after the fact, you know, seeing him in the meeting after at City Hall, And he was just, you know, so professional, knew his stuff, well prepared. Like, no, I was proud to, you know this guy. And I was proud to, like, be at that room trying to figure out solutions to, you know, everything that's going on with the resolution that was passed. When last year, 2017?
2017, yeah, I think, yeah. So I want to go back, because I want to go back, Brian, to when you had the exchange with the officer. And, I mean, you were saying some stuff. And the one thing that got me, because I think you had him. Like, if you guys were playing chess, like, you had him. And then he hit you with a, well, are you familiar with something? Like, son, I don't know what it was. And you came right back. Like, and then they really wanted to know, well, how are you familiar with this stuff? And you told him. And then it was like, okay. And that's all I saw. And that was enough for me. But talk about that. Like, at any point, were you nervous? Did you think that this was going to work? What did you think?
Yeah, so, I mean, first and foremost, this really, it's not about me. Of course, I was the one who found myself in this situation, but it's about the importance and the effectiveness of CCSM's trainings for Know Your Rights. I mean, I helped design the training, but I'm also a participant in it every single time that we facilitate it with community members. So I want to give a big shout-out to CCSM, who not only educated me, but also helped build this network that created the rapid response that we saw and also put together the turnout for the meeting that KK referenced. I mean, that same group, as well as our community, is what gave me the power and the strength to respond the way that I did. I mean, I've been in situations before with the authorities. I've been approached – well, approached is a nice word, but I've had Border Patrol agents run at me with their shotguns drawn. So it's not my first time being in a high stakes situation, but the reason why this time was different is because I had two community members in my car, and my actions were going to determine potentially what happened to those community members, whether or not they were going to be able to go home or they were going to be thrust into the deportation pipeline. And so for that reason, I was a little nervous. I honestly, in the moment, didn't feel like I was as composed as I see myself in the video. and I think that ICE is, you know, they rely on tactics of intimidation and false information in order to get people to comply with what they want to do. And so I think they were taken aback by the fact that I wasn't budging. And when they one example of that intimidation is when they tried to say, like, do you know the specific act? I mean, this section of the INA that they cited, 1324, is about harboring, transporting, and smuggling non-citizens. So it was an implicit threat, like, oh, well, it was essentially saying, well, we believe you're doing that right now. Of course, I haven't been charged with anything. I don't believe that I was doing that. If they wanted to charge me with that, I would say, well, you're going to have to charge every bus driver, taxi driver, flight attendant, because note to self, there's 11 million undocumented people in this country, and they got to get around somewhere. So people transport them all the time. They have the same rights under the Constitution, and I'm glad to stand with them in this situation and any other.
Okay.
Wow. I got a quick question. You mentioned in a previous situation that you've had shotguns drawn by Border Patrol. I've seen a lot of Flex Your Rights videos and stuff like that, and so many people around the United States that are doing these movements and First Amendment audits and things like that, and I've seen the conversations. A lot of times you'll see people who say, you know what, just comply and be quiet, or when you hear about people who are getting shot or getting assaulted by police, they're like, you know what, if you just comply and be quiet. With those things in mind, and I'm pretty sure you've seen them or heard them in conversation yourself, what makes you say, you know what, I'm not going to just shut up and comply. I'm going to stand my ground. I'm going to flex my rights. You know, what makes you feel that you're going to go that direction as opposed to any other, knowing that there could be consequences that could be detrimental to your life?
I mean, again, I think it was the fact that the lives of my community members were on the line. I definitely realize that I carry a lot of privilege with me. I am a white male. It carries a lot of weight in this society. I think that, you know, when other folks that don't have that privilege, that don't look like me, especially people of color, it's a different situation in that, you know, it's more dangerous, and we have to recognize that. But we also have to recognize that everybody has rights, regardless of immigration status in this country. So, you know, I think it is a very personal decision, but the way that I look at it is that the more people like me with privilege who stand up and defend the rights of ourselves and other people's, the stronger our collective rights will be, and the more power we'll have to hold authorities accountable when they violate the rights of somebody else.
Well said.
Yeah, very well said. I got to give them a clap for that. Mm-hmm. Definitely give them a clap.
So when you saw the reaction from going viral, I think the last time I saw it was like 8 million views. Crazy. What did that feel like?
So I'm going to bring it back a little bit, because when we first did a press release like 3 days after this happened, we sent it out to big papers. I mean, our press list is like 100 deep. And mm-hmm. that includes the New York Times, USA Today, etc., people who have covered our movement before. The only people who bid on it were the Register Star, the Times Union, and the Daily Freeman down in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it. So then fast forward like 3 weeks.
Then you got popping.
Yeah, actually, so I should say that there was a couple broadcast media stations in Albany that did pick it up once we started having meetings with the city and the police department, because mm-hmm. we haven't mentioned, but the police department did come to ICE's rescue, or they aided them in showing up when ICE called them, for another topic, of course. But mm-hmm. I felt like it was a bigger story than that. I was wondering why there wasn't more attention to it. Not obviously not because it's me personally, but because I hadn't seen a ton of instances online of this happening before. So it was a pleasant surprise when Tuesday night we got this email from Now This. We were actually late in responding to it because I was in a legal training with some other CCSM members. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I went to respond to it, they had already published the video. And within like 24 hours, it was at like 1 or 2 million. My brother hit me up. He was like, I think you're going to get to 10. So it ended up, it's at like 12.3 million just wow. on that, just on that video. And there's wow. multiple iterations
yeah,
of it.
So yeah, many.
I personally think there's probably around 20 million people who have watched it, or maybe Ooh. Less people that watched it multiple times. But, yeah, I mean, it feels good because it shows the importance and the power of our movement existing mm-hmm. in this time. And it is a way for it wasn't me who went viral. It was Know Your Rights who went viral. 20 million more people now know that law enforcement, especially immigration, they need a warrant to enter any private space, whether it be your vehicle, your house, or the kitchen to your restaurant. So that's the most exciting part to me, is that I can be a vehicle for spreading CCSM and Know Your Rights mm-hmm. information to people across the country and around the world.
Yeah, yeah. I got to give you another clap, man. You're clap worthy today.
And my next question is, so what would you like to see going forward as far as like our city that we live in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the meetings have allowed us to plan out some progress for the future of Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
I do still believe that there needs to be some accountability process. I mean, what I'm taking away without getting into specific details is that we passed this executive order 2 years ago. Nothing has been done to really make it work the way that it's supposed to. And I believe that's to some degree from a lack of effort and intention.
Mm-hmm.
And just realistically, like if my boss told me to do something and then 2 years later it still wasn't done, then I would probably be in trouble. And if it was my, it was my boss's boss, and my boss also didn't do anything, which in this case would be the mayor, you know, I wouldn't have my job, right? So, you know, I think that our conversations are going in a positive direction, but there has to be some form of accountability because, you know, it's been adversely affecting the immigrant community in our city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm interested and excited to continue conversations and to see the progress that's been made. And I look forward to working with the mayor, the police chief, and the city council, and most importantly, the community, to figure out how we want to move forward collectively.
I want to go back quickly. How do you get the call, or how do you get the notification that you're going to be on CNN?
I think it was either an email or a... Honestly, I don't know. We had so many... We're basically an all-volunteer-based organization, so we had somebody watching the email, somebody watching Facebook, and somebody answering our hotline. I don't exactly remember which one of the three it came through, but it was definitely one of those. So, yeah, it was exciting. And honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. I was texting our group. We were in this big group thread, and we were like, is this going to be the most strategic, like, first broadcast on air interview that we do, or should we wait for something else? We were hitting up like Trevor Noah. But we decided to go with it. We thought maybe something else would come up. Nothing has, which we're fine with. You know, media cycle short, people are still watching the video, which is the important part. But
yeah,
Trevor Noah, if you're listening, yeah.
That'd be a dope interview.
That would be crazy.
I did want to ask the questions because you started talking about it, and I know a lot of our listeners don't really understand what it means, but we are a sanctuary city, right?
Sanctuary city.
What exactly does that mean? And I'm under the impression that it means that this is a safe haven. Like, I guess, I don't know. So I'm not going to throw it out there, but maybe Slay, you can help me out. Brian, you can help me out. What exactly does that mean?
You can go ahead, Brian. You're
the expert here.
So, I mean, there's no real definition to a sanctuary city. It's not like a legal definition. The main idea of the sanctuary city, though, revolves around local police departments' collaboration with immigration mm-hmm. and customs enforcement. So mm-hmm. in some places, this is called a Fourth Amendment resolution or a Fourth Amendment executive order. And the idea is that the Fourth Amendment prohibits unwarranted search and seizure, which is why the immigration officer wasn't allowed into my vehicle. And so the idea is that police departments should not be able to collaborate with immigration and customs enforcement unless that judicial warrant is present, which is mandated under the Constitution. You know, collaborating with ICE in most places, unless there's an agreement, an intergovernmental or what they call a 287G agreement, is not mandated. So police are voluntarily cooperating with them. And so sanctuary city resolutions are, in our city, it's called a welcoming and inclusive city resolution and executive order. They're meant to prohibit collaboration between local police department and immigration and customs enforcement.
Okay, let's take a call. Hold that. I have a question about that. Hello, caller, you're on the air? Hello, caller, you're on the air? Hello? I hear somebody. All right. Call back, please.
Call back.
Huh? You call back? Hold on. Nope, not here.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
You should call the right line?
Yeah, you gotta probably call the other line.
Yeah. So I'm gonna play devil's advocate a little bit here, Brian and Slay and Ray. So what about the situation where you figure, and I don't know, We assume there's a blue wall, meaning that the cops work together. We assume mm-hmm. that. And I don't know how the hierarchy goes, but would the ICE officer trump like a city police officer so that they don't have a choice, that they have to help them out because maybe, you know, something down the line? Is that actual, or is that just, you know?
I mean, with the order, that basically expels Hudson Police from interacting or assisting, so they're not supposed to at all.
But how's that work?
A ICE officer, they can't necessarily come in and direct HPD. Okay. So when they come in, they're coming in on their own accord.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that they're here, they don't even let HPD know that they're here.
And are they supposed to, or they don't have to?
hypothetically, I guess.
I think it's like a courtesy thing. That's what I mean. You come into another officer's backyard, it's usually customary or a courtesy call
and
to
when
say,
they,
hey, I'm
and
around.
When they show up, you know, they're in unmarked cars. So it's hard to say. You know, I mean, the chief said himself in the public meeting that he doesn't always know when they're here.
Mm. Ah, let me try to answer this myself. Well, that didn't work. No, I was wondering about that. Okay, also, and Brian, I want to ask you this. What do you say to the people that are like, well, if they are undocumented, they don't need to be here. They need to go to the correct channels like everyone else. What do you say to those people? Because there's a lot of people out there that feel that way. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm only playing devil's advocate because the one thing that we have to do on our show is that we have to go on both sides. We just can't go, we love you, Brian, we love you, because we do love you. But there's people that listen and they might say, what about these people? And oh, that's a bad term. What about the undocumented work people here? They are undocumented. Why wouldn't they go through it the correct channels?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think the assumption is that we have a channel that's working to begin with. And the second assumption is that everybody who's here who is undocumented, like just cross the border without permission. So the fact of the matter is that the majority of people in this country who are undocumented did come here to this country with some type of visa or immigration paperwork, and they've overstayed it or their status has changed. So people don't understand that immigration law changes rapidly. Mm-hmm. And so one day you might have status and you did everything legal, and then the next day you don't have status. So that's kind of the middle ground of it. But my real feeling about it is that the majority of these people are fleeing violence, are fleeing civil war, are fleeing poverty. The people at the border right now, they're doing everything that United States law says. You come to the border, you present yourself, you say you're seeking asylum. So even the people who are doing it legally are being attacked. I think all of this is just a sign of our broken immigration system. I say broken, but really we know it's working exactly how it's planned, which is a capitalist and racist immigration system.
Okay.
Wow.
I like that. I like that answer, man. I like that. I did have one other question. Another question is, there's so many people that love police and they think police do no wrong. So there's people that watched your video and they said, let the cops do their job. You're mm-hmm. getting in the way. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? How do you respond to that? And before you respond, I do want to say something. Like from me watching your video, you were talking about a warrant, and the officer said he had a warrant, and you said, but it's not signed by a judge. It's not an official warrant. And I mean, just that right there, as being a black man with young black niece, nephews and nieces and sons, that right there meant a whole lot, you know. So, and I mean, that's something that, you know, you can tell them. So how do you respond to someone that says, hey, you know, let the cops do their job. You're getting in the way, you're obstructing or whatever.
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, my MO isn't to be out here railing against the police. You know, Hutt's HPD, I grew up with some of the people that are in HPD. I don't have qualms with officers. I have qualms with the institution. I have qualms with how policing occurs in our city and how policing occurs around the country, not with necessarily with a specific officer unless they're conducting themselves in a way that warrants criticism. ICE was doing their job, and ICE's job is to attack our community, separate families, and deport people. So, of course, I disagree with the institution, and I disagree with the tactics that the officers use in order to support that institution. Of course, if you talk to anyone, especially an authority who wants to take rights away from people, yeah, the Constitution gets in the way of you doing your job. That's the purpose of having rights, though. It would be a hell of a lot easier if you didn't need a warrant to bust down a door and take somebody that you wanted. Mm-hmm. And that's, to some degree, what separates us. You know, our laws prohibit the government from doing that. In some countries where immigrants are coming from, especially in civil war, like, you don't have any rights, especially if you're you're in the political opposition. So, I mean, this is the strength of, you know, if you want to, for example, if you want to say that our country is based on Law and Order, which I don't agree with, at least practice it, right? So if it's based on Law and Order, then I'm telling you, the highest law of the land, the Constitution, tells me that you need a judicial warrant in order to enter my private space, so I'm going to ask you for it. And the paper that he was holding is just a Department of Homeland Security document that, frankly, I think he signed himself because he still had the pen in his hand. Oh, you can see it in the video. And even Officer Moore at our meetings has mentioned that there's no other agency that gets to operate like this. Like, the paper that he had is called a warrant for the arrest of alien, and he doesn't have to do anything to make that official. He just signs it himself. He doesn't have to bring evidence to a court. He doesn't have to have a judge review it. He doesn't have to have a judge sign it. And those are all the aspects of a judicial warrant which make them valid.
Wow. How do we allow that stuff? Right?
Yeah.
Got anything, Ray?
So I would ask for anyone who was trying to become more knowledgeable about these types of things and knowing what their rights to travel is and how constitutional rights work, how would you tell them to start, or where would you tell them to start, or even how did you start yourself to kind of get yourself more well-versed in those areas?
Yeah, so I would tell everybody to start right now. You can start by just Googling the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. You can start by looking up the Constitution of the United States. They should be giving them out in every school, but I doubt that's happening. I did go to Hudson. I know that we had some civic engagement classes, but not nearly what we needed. Beyond that, I would say, you know, CCSM is definitely dedicated to facilitating more Know Your Rights workshops for immigrants and allies, so definitely be on the lookout for that. We have some material on our webpage as well. It's a little bit limited at the moment as we're redesigning, but again, the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, they're a great spot to start.
Got anything you want to add, Brian? Anything you want to say on the way out?
Yeah, tell the people how to reach, you know, CCSM and
on the websites and everything.
Future events or anything you guys got going on.
Yeah, for sure. So you can reach us on our website, sanctuarycolumbiacounty.org. Our Facebook is the same. And our hotline, if you ever have an emergency, is 518-303-3848. And we currently don't have any events planned, but we are in the midst of planning a Know Your Rights training for sometime soon, hopefully by the end of April.
Okay, let's see if we can get this call. Hello, caller, you're on the air?
Hey, yeah, I'm on the air.
Hey, yeah, you are on the air. How you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Who is this?
All right, it's me. You about probably recognize my voice.
What's up, Verity? How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm just saying I want to give a huge shout-out for Brian for what he's done and also to the whole movement. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Every single person that's involved with it.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
And I guess my question was kind of, like, what do you say to people that claim you're not being patriotic or this and that? Because to me, the essential part of being an American is actually, like, immigration and standing up for your rights. But, you know, it's a hard discussion. So I just want to hear how you present that, because you're awesome at this.
That's for you, Bri.
But, yeah, I mean, I would say that people who criticize me or our movement for being un-American are hypocritical in their political philosophy or their beliefs because, again, just like you said, in my eyes, there's nothing more American than standing up for the Constitution. If I allowed that officer to violate my Fourth Amendment right, I'm giving the okay for him and any other authority figure or individual to violate the rights of other people. And I think, you know, our country supposedly prides itself on standing up for people who are marginalized, people are oppressed. Clearly, this administration has a different look at that. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm as American as they come, and I'm a humanist. You know, I don't need borders to define my identity either, but I do have a dedication to this country specifically in making it a better place for everyone.
No, and I hear you on that because, you know, I'm a internationalist myself, but at the same time, I you know, you hear that from people, and mm-hmm. I just wanted to hear how you talk about it, because it's something I have to do all the time and tell people, you know what, I'm a first-generation American, too. And so what? Who cares? And, you know, it really isn't about, like, when you got here and this and that. And, you know, we need to be treating people humanely. This is a whole country founded on immigrants. And our Constitution and civil liberties trumps everything and should allow for that. But I just wanted to hear again, like, how you, like, say it to people, because you're obviously very good at it.
Verity, like always, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
You rock.
Thank
you. We got a lot of show left, so stay tuned.
Okay,
in, right?
Cool. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Verity.
Thanks. Yep. Bye.
Bye. Let me give Verity a clap, man. She did her thing.